All right, I'm mixing things up today. This is not a deep dive on a memoir, but it's a bunch of things I learned from a conversation with a memoir writer, Cheryl Strayed. And if you guys remember, the first memoir deep dive I ever did was on Cheryl Strayed's Wild. So I am a huge fan of her writing. And this was from a 2-hour long, I guess you'd call it a webinar, that was hosted by Steve Almond. And I didn't know anything about Steve Almond, but apparently he was the OG Dear Sugar. And then he passed it off to Cheryl Strayed. So this conversation was recorded on November 8th, but I just got around to watching it yesterday when I was procrastinating on something else. So I was trying to put together my notes for my next memoir deep dive on Kitchen Confidential by Anthony Bourdain. And this seems to be a lesson that I have to keep relearning, that when something isn't speaking to me, I should just drop it and move on. But I read most of the book and there were some things that I liked, but it didn't blow me away. And I just kept feeling like, oh, I should finish this. But like, you know, the problem is that at the end of the day is when I do my reading. I get in bed and I read. It's so much fun to look forward to getting in bed to read. Like, I'm so excited to read my book. And with Kitchen Confidential, like, the writing was good and I enjoyed it, but I wasn't so excited to read it. And I don't know how many times I need to learn this lesson, but I was just like plowing through, like, I can do this, I can do this. And some of you might be thinking like, oh, I thought you said you weren't going to do any more celebrity memoirs. And Anthony Bourdain is a celebrity, but he's a chef. So he's not exactly like a celebrity in the way that I was thinking of, like, you know, these famous actors and things. But there were some other reasons why I read this book. One, my mother-in-law had it, and so she just gave it to me. So it was sitting on my shelf, and I was looking at it. Two, I've read a couple of his essays in the New York Times in the past, and I thought they were very funny and playful. So I already knew that I liked his writing. And three, it's all about working in the service industry. I mean, he was talking about being a chef, but as a person who's worked in the service industry for 18 years as a server and a bartender, I thought that I would relate to a lot of what he was writing about. So I was really interested. So that's why I decided to read it. But I read most of the book and then I was transcribing all my notes and I was trying to figure out what I was going to talk about. And I just wasn't excited about it. So I was just like, it was taking me forever. And then I'm watching this conversation with Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond, and I'm just riveted through the whole conversation. I'm taking all these notes. And then last night I was talking to Sam about it. And of course, because he has all my good ideas, he's like, well, why don't you do an episode about that? And so then this morning I just started putting my notes together, and here we are. So that's why we're doing this. So in this conversation, Cheryl talks about this almighty list, and the almighty list is the running tally of things to do, you know, doctor's appointments, school drop-offs, household chores, projects, etc. Right now, it's like double, the list is doubled because it's the holidays. So there's just like so many Christmas things, like decorating the tree, decorating the house, doing the presents, figuring out the meal plan for Christmas, figuring out what I'm going to cook. And then we're traveling a bunch. So it's just like, it's nonstop. But in this conversation with Steve Almond, they talk about the challenges writers face in the attempt to balance the demands of a creative life with the rest of their life, with this almighty list. So one of the first things that Cheryl says is, the hardest part about memoir is the unfortunate fact that other people exist. And I thought this was so funny. And she says that every time she writes about anyone other than herself, whether it be a friend or a family member, she asks a series of questions. And so let me tell you what some of these questions are. Will this hurt our relationship because I'm writing honestly about it? Will this unfairly invade someone's privacy? Will I be able to tell this story in such a way that is both deeply rooted in my truth and also acknowledging that that person I'm writing about would tell a different version of this story? Do I have the right to tell their story, even if it's just through my perspective? Will invading their privacy harm them or hurt them? And if the answer is yes, it really has to be my story to tell. So these are really good questions. And she says every time, every single time she sits down to write, she asks these questions because it's always changing. So Cheryl recently wrote a long form essay, she called it, or she called it like an ebook. She said it's like 8,000 words. And this essay is about her mother-in-law, and it's called Two Women Walk Into a Bar. And she talked about it in this conversation, and she described her mother-in-law as complicated and their relationship as complicated. And her, I don't know if I already said this, her mother-in-law passed away some years ago. And so she was in this relationship with her she knew her for 20 years. It was really hard to write this essay, but it was an essay that she really felt she needed to write. And she had all these questions going through her head about, and like worries about how to approach writing it. Because, I don't know much about her mother-in-law, but she did make some comments just in this webinar that like her mother-in-law said some mean things to her. She said something about telling her to go on Weight Watchers when she was pregnant. She made some other comments about her weight before, you know, like really, really mean things. And so she was thinking about one, okay, she passed away. So how do I write about this person who is now dead and do it in a respectful way? Two, her husband. Her husband was an only child. He loved his mother dearly. He had a great relationship with her, even though like he understood that she was complicated and, you know, all these other things were true. And so she really cared what her husband thought. And then her kids. Her kids are teenagers now. And she thought about, okay, well, when they eventually read this down the line, they're going to be reading about me writing about their grandmother. And, you know, she didn't want them to think that like she didn't like their grandmother or anything like that. And so how do you do that then? How do you respectfully and truthfully write about a relationship that is very complicated? And I'm just like, oh my God, I need to read this. So in case you're wondering about this essay, it is, it's not available yet, but I have good news. And listen to this. After I finished watching this, I went on Cheryl Strayed's Facebook page and she had posted about it, and I replied in the thread. I don't know if it's called a thread. I've just moved over from Twitter to Facebook, so I'm learning. But I commented and I asked her, I thanked her for, you know, doing this webinar, and I asked her about her book, and she replied. Can you believe that? How cool. So anyway, she told me that this essay is going to be available in January, and you can either buy it as like a link, a downloadable link, or you can get the Audible audio version to listen to. So I'm so excited to read this essay, this like 8,000 word essay, to see how she was able to strike this balance and do it, because I feel like there's going to be a lot of lessons in there to help me with relationships in my life. And so anyway, she wrote this piece and she first shared it with her husband, and because she really, you know, wanted to make sure that he was okay with it. He said something like, I feel like you gave me my mom back, which is so beautiful. And then she said, there's no higher honor than to honestly portray people. So she said, don't be afraid of the dark stuff, because the beautiful stuff is there too. And so she was talking about this essay, how like, yes, there are stories about her mother-in-law, you know, saying these mean things to her and doing other things that I'm not sure about yet. But also she was generous and beautiful and kind. And like, there's all these wonderful things, all these other beautiful moments that she also had with her mother-in-law. I was like, okay, the trouble with this is that it's really easy for me to remember the dark stuff. I don't recall the beautiful stuff as much. So my question, if I could ask Cheryl a question, would be, how do we extract the beautiful stuff about the people who have harmed us? And this got me thinking about my sister, my older sister, Alexis, who is 17 months older than me, which is fun fact. Cheryl's kids are 17 months apart and my kids are 17 months apart, except Cheryl's kids are now 18 and 19 years old. But anyway, my sister and I, we never got along, and we still kind of don't. And I have lots of stories about the ways in which I was the victim and she was the mean sister. How do I find the beautiful moments? And so I was trying to sit with this, and I did think of one, but it's a very tiny one, so I'll share it with you. When we were kids and we would walk somewhere together, which was all the time, we walked through the neighborhood, we walked to school together, and she did this all the way through high school. But if we were walking on the sidewalk and I was walking closer to the street, she would grab me by the arms and she would move me to the inside track. And then she would walk on the side closer to the street. And most of the time I would just, you know, let her move me and not say anything. But one day I said, "Why did you do that?" And she said, like it was the most obvious thing in the world, "So you don't get hit by a car." That was her way of protecting me. She was being my big sister, and it was really sweet. And so I'm glad I have this moment, and it's something that I would definitely include when I'm writing about my sister, because I can't paint her as the villain, because she's not, and because it's not fair, and because there were moments. It's just really hard to think about them. But then Cheryl did say something else that I was like, okay, I can do this. And that was that, here's what she said. "The ass I'm going to show the most is my own." I love how she said that. So here she was specifically talking about in Wild, she talks about how she cheated on her husband, and her husband was a very good man. He was very good to her. And so she said, "When you write about yourself, you have to say where you failed. And that is how you create credibility. Because we don't believe you if you're the victor who always does the right thing and doesn't make any bad decisions." Okay, so I can do this. And this I am able to recognize, well, sometimes I'm able to recognize where I failed and where I messed up. And so then I can, this goes back to what J.R. Moringer said in his essay in The New Yorker about when he was writing the, ghostwriting the memoir for Prince Harry. He said, you have to be unsparing about yourself. So if I'm going to talk shit on somebody else, not shit, but you know what I mean. If I'm going to say negative things about somebody else, I have to damn well say negative things about myself too. So to go back to my sister, I recently had a hard conversation with her, and I did write about this. So some of you guys might remember the newsletter I wrote about this, but, this was a conversation that was really, really hard to initiate. And it's something that I've been thinking about for a long time. There were some specific things from our past around my writing that made me shut down and not want to open up to her and talk to her about anything, because she has said things to me like, "You can't call yourself a writer if you don't make money. It's just a hobby." And then she said, "My biggest fear is that you write a book one day and you write things about me that aren't true." And those things really, those quotes really stayed with me for all these years. And since then, and this was like in our 20s and now we're in our late 30s, I haven't talked to her about my writing. And my writing is a very big part of my life, and I've just shut that part down. The reason that I initiated the conversation was because she's been calling me a lot lately. And I've been like very skeptical. I'm like, why is she calling me? And usually when she calls me, it's because she needs something. Like she needs to ask me something, like some kind of like logistical thing. And these times she's been calling me and she's actually asking me like, "So what's up?" And there's nothing else. It's just like, tells me about her life and then what's going on with you. And I keep waiting for like the punchline, not the punchline. I keep waiting for her to be like, "Oh, and so I needed to ask you a question," and there's nothing. And I'm just like, what in the world? So finally, after she's done this so many times, I was like, I think she might just be being nice. The other detail here is that my sister and I are both parents now, and her daughter is right in between my kids' ages. So we hit parenthood at the same time. And she did say when I asked her why she's been calling so much, she said that was why. So it was just like a nice thing, and it made it easier for me to say, okay, well, there is something that I want to talk to you about. And I told her those quotes. I told her exactly what she said to me, those things that have stayed with me for so many years that are seared into my brain that really hurt my feelings. And she came back with things that I have said to her, her own things that she's been holding on to for all these years. And it was very weird to hear her say to me these things that have bothered her for so long, because I didn't remember. And I completely believed her. It was like, so the thing that she said that I said was like years ago, she was broken up with by this guy that she dated for 12 years. So it was like a really sad breakup. And she called me one time and she was just talking about it. And at the end of her talking, I was like, oh my God, that would make such a good opening for a blog post. Cause this was when I was writing a blog under my real name. As soon as she said it, I was like, oh, I don't remember that. And also I can totally see myself saying that. I'm like, I'm sure that I did. it's very cringy. So then in an actual blog post, I wrote that her boyfriend had cheated on her and that she would have cheated on him given the opportunity. And she said after that, that she told me that I couldn't, that she never would have cheated ever. She was like very offended that I wrote that. And I was not to write about her anymore without her permission. This is, you know, like from her perspective, I'm like, yeah, I was really shitty. That was really dumb and I shouldn't have done that. And I'm sorry. And I said that to her. And so now when I write about my sister, I'm like, okay, well, this is great because now I can say these things about myself because I'm not always the victim or the hero. You know, sometimes she was. So to recap this whole little section, it's one, finding the beautiful moments in those hard, difficult relationships. And then two, finding ways to be unsparing about yourself and show the ugly side of yourself and all the places where you failed and where you were in the wrong. So next, I want to talk about the secret of memoir. Cheryl says, I knew I had a book when I realized I was asking a universal question and tying it to my own. I think this was my biggest takeaway from the whole thing. She said, what's the particular question at the center of your story? She said, mine was, how can I live without my mother? And she's talking about For Wild. And she said, then ask, what's the universal question at the center of your story that's connected to that particular story? And so for her, it was, how do we go on when we've lost someone who's essential to us? How do we bear the unbearable? And then she said, it began with me. It became about us. I love that line. It began with me. It became about us. So I was thinking about my book and the book that I want to write. And I realized that my particular personal question is the same as my universal question. And the question is, how do I live my authentic life? And if I turn that into a universal question, it would be, how do we live our authentic lives? And I love this question. And this question is something that I'm thinking about constantly and I'm working through constantly. And so I really like this as my universal question. But I'm thinking that maybe I'm having so much trouble getting started because my personal question is too big. It's too universal. It's not specific enough. How do I live my authentic life? It's so big. So I don't have an answer, but I love that Cheryl has prompted me now to think about this, to think about my personal question and my universal question. Okay, so Steve, throughout this whole thing, he's posting questions. Some of them, I don't know if they're any are from him, but a lot of them are from the people who are on the call, and they're such good questions. So one of the questions was, how do you find and cultivate your authentic voice? And this is something that is asked a lot in Rite of Passage, and Cheryl just had such a beautiful answer. So I'm just going to read this to you. She says, write. Just keep writing. You write and you write and you read and you imitate other writers who you think are cool and interesting and you try your hand at various things on the page that make you feel excited or that make you feel like you're getting close to some kind of truth or meaning. Pretty soon, what happens is, after a while, you'll relax. And the voice with which you'll be speaking will be your own. Voice is when you've absorbed all those people who've influenced you, but you're not imitating them anymore. You're joining them at the party. You have something to say. It's about relaxation. It's about saying something in the way only you can say it. I mean, mic drop, right? That's so good. She just like said that off the fly. Like what? Okay. So once I hit the 3-year mark for publishing consistently each week, and right now I'm at like 3.5-year mark. So there was a settling that has happened. There's a confidence in how I'm writing what I want to say. There's less doubt. I'm not saying there's no doubt, but there's much less of it. There's an ease. So I get what she's saying about this relaxation. And I'm sure that's going to continue. I'm not 100% into my authentic voice yet, but there's definitely something that happened at the 3-year mark. And that specific thing was that up until that point, some weeks were just harder than others to get out my newsletter each week. But now, as soon as I publish on Tuesday, instead of thinking, oh, what am I going to write about next week? It's more like a, oh, I wonder what I'm going to write about next week. And that shift has been huge for my motivation and joy. Okay, here's the last question. And it was actually the last question of the session. And Steve asked, how can I write a book if my family says I'm crazy and that it didn't happen? And here's what Cheryl had to say. As for the family members, they're not your audience. If you would like that little committee of people to be the ones who decide what you do with your life, okay, don't write the book. But if you think they probably don't have your best interest in heart, if they're saying that to you because it would be more comfortable for them that you never do what you are called to do, that you never told that story, they're just not the people you need to listen to. You need to simply trust yourself and write that book. I was leaning very close to the screen for this answer. So after the hard conversation with my sister, I've been thinking so much about all my family members and how much of a barrier I feel with telling my story and wondering how they're going to feel about it. But my story is not for them. That's liberating. I want to respect them and I value our relationships, but the book is not for them. I had so much fun watching this. I already thought that Cheryl Strayed was such a beautiful writer. And seeing her speak, this is the first time I've seen her speak. And she had like such a great Zoom background, by the way. It was just like some kind of like top floor room that was like her writing space, it seemed. And the lighting was just so warm and cozy. And I just like wanted to sit on one of her couches in the background and have a deep conversation with her. Anyway, I just felt so much more connected to her now, especially because she addressed so many of the things that I think about and I struggle with, and her kids are 17 months apart like mine, and she wrote Wild over the span of a couple years when she had two toddlers just running around the house, and that's kind of like where I am in my life right now. So just this like possibility at what I could do. She also made this comment that she learned early on that, you know, everyone says you can't call yourself a writer unless you write every day, and she doesn't write every day. And I'm like, yeah, me too. I don't write every day. So I was very inspired and just really pumped up to not only take what she said and apply it to my life, but also to share it with other people, share it with you guys, because I just thought there was so much value in this. So the memoir I'm reading right now is The Liars Club by Mary Carr. And she writes about her relationship with her sister. And it reminded me in some ways of my relationship with my sister in that they didn't get along or see eye to eye. And there is a very cool thing that Mary Carr does that addresses this issue that I've been talking about today. And I'm going to talk about it in the next memoir deep dive. So until then, happy holidays, you guys. I've got the Christmas lights on and the nutcrackers and Santas are scattered all over the house and the Christmas music is playing from morning till night because this is my favorite time of the year. So I'm sending you holiday warmth and cheer.